All right. We hit everybody's favorite. So let us
fight you.
All right. Welcome to New Game Plus, a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
Nolan here.
And this is episode 299.
Ah, too close.
next episode is our 6-year anniversary.
Weird.
And we want you to be a part. So on Saturday, October the 2nd, we'll be hosting live call-ins where you can call in to the show, have a brief chat with the three of us, and then pitch a game that you want us to play for episode 301.
I'm scared.
We're scared?
I'm hyped. I love that people, A, get influence into our next game. I feel like that's a fun way to start the next season. And B, get to like choose a game and not just like stick it in a randomizer, but like advocate for it and tell us why they want us to play it. That's really fun.
We should be rich and famous by now.
Yeah,
sure, but that's unrelated to this podcast.
6 years.
I think we could be scared and hype. Yes. It'd be Skyped, which is a
the
very good
worst
VoIP
program.
It's absolute trash. But
bad jokes.
You said they're pitching their games that they want us to play, 15 years old or older, games that we haven't already played before, any console, any genre, and depending on the quality of your pitch, that is how many entries into that randomizer you shall get. Excellent pitches will get 3 entries, good pitches will get 2 entries, and a pitch will get 1.
One that we
and if
do
you,
not
if you
like
come
as
on
much.
And don't pitch the game, but just troll us or, I don't know, waste our time, then you get a negative vote, which does things to your life.
No, I don't,
I don't know what I'm saying.
NGP credit.
If you want to call in, then come into our Discord general voice chat on Saturday, October 2nd, anytime between 10 o'clock a.m. and 12 o'clock p.m. Central Time. Central Time.
Yes.
And you will have the opportunity to be a part of our 6-year anniversary, episode number 300. But for now, a very special episode is happening here with podcast editor Tom Tate. Before we bring him on, though, we do need to talk just briefly about an announcement that just happened. We kind of talked about it off air because I had just seen it. It's absolutely ridiculous. There's an upcoming animated movie titled Mario.
I'm excited that they're Mario.
Okay. Most people have probably heard of this by now. It just happened 2 days ago. But you cannot not hear about this when, one, a new Mario movie or show, that's big in and of itself. But two, the cast that they assembled to be the voice actors for this is absolutely absurd.
I'm kind of okay with it.
Okay, everyone's mad at who's voicing Mario.
They're at least astonished by it.
But it's because I don't like this guy, really. I mean, he's fine. He's okay. He's okay. But for a Mario movie, like the Mario movie, yes, there's been one before. Let's not talk about it. It's not animated. But this is a big deal. It's going to be very successful, probably.
Sure.
And they picked this guy.
This guy. Let me give the cast, right?
Yeah.
I won't give the full cast, but I'll give some of the highlights. Okay. We've got Anya Taylor-Joy as Peach.
Love her.
We've got Charlie Day as Luigi.
Love him.
We've got Jack Black as Bowser.
Love him.
Perfect choice, honestly.
Yeah. And even Seth Rogen as Donkey
Love
Kong,
him.
Which...
Also perfect.
Donkey Kong doesn't talk.
But like, that's good. That's going to be great.
And then the one that might have caused some contention is Chris Pratt as Mario.
Yeah. Very
I'm
weak
all for
and
it.
Odd. Is he's not Italian.
Well, you don't know his background.
Right, and Seth Rogen's not a monkey.
Is he Italian?
I have no idea. I don't think he's Italian. The monkey comment doesn't, that's not the equivalent, Kenny, but.
Okay, Jack Black's not a giant turtle. Well, wait, he's closer to that.
You can't actually go get a monkey.
Hold on. Do you think, okay, first of all, is Donkey Kong a monkey?
He's a, generally, he's an ape.
Yes.
He's an ape.
Are apes monkeys?
Not technically. This is a Kleenex tomato fruit conversation we're not having. I don't care
whether
a hot dog is a sandwich. Like, okay. Let's just not.
We don't have to have the conversation of, like, do we like Chris Pratt as Mario? Because it doesn't matter, and Chris Pratt is going to be Mario, unless there's a lot of backlash and they change it, which, who knows. But you've got to watch the announcement from Nintendo. It is so tone deaf. It's so out of touch. When they announce Chris Pratt, they're like, we chose Chris Pratt because he's cool. You know, like, just it's the translations, the way that it's delivering it. And you've got to watch a Dunkey. He's a YouTube star. He's actually watching the announcement and just laughing as it rolls out, because it gets more and more absurd because of the cast list and everything like that. And the way that Nintendo's presenting it, it is an absolute absurd. This whole thing is absurd, but I'm glad to be a part of it.
I just think there's so many other options for Mario. Like,
who would you choose as Mario if we're doing that, then?
Anyone else? Christopher Walken.
Okay, so you don't know.
Me.
Kenny would... Okay, Kenny.
No,
so,
I'm okay with the casting. I get that there is outrage. I mean, that's not unexpected. It's the internet. They could have cast it perfectly and there would be outrage. Regardless, I'm okay with it. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Here's the great thing, though. It's going to be entertaining for us either way. Either they'll pull it off, it'll be a cool Mario movie, and we'll all get to be like, sweet, that was fun. Or it'll fail miserably, and we'll get like memes and stuff. And so I'm just like, I'm strapping in for the ride regardless. Bring it on.
Ooh, bring it on.
To the return.
Yeah, I think it'll be good for us either way. I think they've got a long time. I think December 2022 is when it is going to be released, which is over a year
away.
Maybe
they'll recast. Maybe they'll see the
reception. But hopefully not. I'm with Kenny. Hopefully not. Hopefully they'll stay with this ridiculous cast list, including Chris Pratt. I just know that Nintendo, with this one, has tons of muscle, but I fear that they might be pushing a bit too hard and the whole thing might come crashing down on top of them. It's a Samson reference, if you're following me, a biblical Samson reference.
Amen.
Because the game that we're playing this week as our retro game of the week is Little Samson.
Overview.
First of all, we would like to welcome our good friend. This feels like family. This feels like home. We are having with us now Tom, joining us on the podcast. He's been our faithful editor and podcast producer for a long time, friend of the show from the early days. And about a year in, Tom, you'll have to give us a little bit more context and detail, but it was around a year in, somewhere around there, you came on as, I believe, the first member of our team of, like, who was going to, like, help us produce the show as we were taking it to the next level or a new season, new arena of NGP. And you've been with us ever since. So introduce yourself to those that might not know, because you've always been behind the scenes, and tell us a little bit about your connection and history with our podcast.
Yeah, definitely. First of all, it's a pleasure to be on the show. Super excited. Thank you guys for inviting me and bringing me on. I'm excited to talk about this week's game. I went back into my Gmail and I just did a quick search for ngppodcast@gmail.com. And the first correspondence we had was November 2nd, 2017. So it's been 4 years.
Yeah, over a year.
It's been a minute.
Yeah, of the podcast.
Just about 4 years. Yeah. So I think that my first episode that I recorded or that I edited with you guys was Sylvester and Tweety in KG Capers. Which was 108, and that was like a trial run. Yeah, so it was a good episode for a trial run.
Yeah.
And then after that, I think the first official one was Unreal Tournament, which was 109, right? But then I've never shared this with you, Dustin, but the episode after that was Retro Recap, and Retro Recap really puts you through your paces as an editor, because there's a whole lot of content to be splicing in and out, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then after that episode, right, was Mega Man 3, which was one of my all-time favorite games, right? Best, that's
going there?
One of the absolute best Mega Man titles. Tom. It might be the number one Mega Man title, right?
Yeah, Tom almost left.
And it did not get New Game Plus.
Because of you.
Mega Man 3 did not get New Game Plus.
Were you actually mad when you were editing that?
I actually had to sit back and take a deep breath and consider, is this the right gig for me?
Yeah.
Can I do this? Can I separate?
Can I listen to these guys?
Yeah. Can I separate my emotions?
But
the emotional side of me
with
the producer side. Yeah.
I kept you on board because that game deserves New Game Plus forever and always. Yeah. And these guys are morons.
People always put that one on me, but it was equally as Kenny as
it was Kenny's fault too.
It probably does. I mean, it's certainly a great game. Sure. It's more a reminder just that I'm bad at games.
I love that
else.
We went there just straight off.
Well, and here's the thing. Tom, I guess, decided that, you know what? I'm going to stick with these guys. And then he stuck with us. I guess it must have been either Mario is Missing or Digimon World, us not giving a New Game Plus, where he was like, I'm done. Yeah. I'm done.
That was it. Yeah. Yeah.
That's
definitely think
the final straw.
I think it was Mario's Missing. Yeah. And I just said, this has to be it for me.
I mean, fair. I don't blame you.
Yeah. So that was it. Yeah.
That's amazing. Listen, I got a couple of stats actually from one of our listens, Marlian. He actually went back and I think he started a little bit early on which episode he thought that you had come on. So these stats might be a little bit off, but still. He said that Tom, let's see, you have had to listen to around 238 hours or just under 10 days of NGP content. The average amount that you have had to cut out of the episodes is about 9 2/3 minutes per episode. Let's see. Oh, he's got more stats that he'll give us on our 300th episode, but those are two of the big things. You've potentially had to listen to our voices over 10 days of your life.
That's terrible.
It's kind of strange that like I listen to you guys every week. You don't really listen to me, right? But I've been listening to you and I don't think I missed a week. I mean, Dustin, maybe you can correct me. I don't think I missed a single week in
Tom, which
years.
Is crazy. I mean, we're gonna thank you more later in this episode, but like who does we've missed weeks. Even Nolan, who thinks that he is perfect attendance, has missed weeks.
Someone
but
died
you,
and I didn't miss a week.
Okay. But you, even in, I mean, you have places to go and things to do, and you still did that, but you would edit on the road, or you would edit before, and we have a tight schedule for those of you that don't know. We typically record on Saturday, and we release our episode late Sunday night.
It's unreasonable. Like, it's not a good thing that we've placed on Tom for all that time, so just so y'all know.
It's good, though. It's good, though. I have, if anybody knows me, I have three kids, right? And my kids, they're in bed Sunday nights. You know, we don't travel with my kids a ton, you know, so it just happens to work out that Sunday nights are the nights where all the kids go to bed and I settle down with, a nice cup of tea, nice warm cup of tea and my headphones, and I sit down and I edit NGP, and it's been really awesome. I mean, honestly, like it's been a great ride, and, you know, I want to thank you guys as content creators for being consistent as well, because everyone knows 2020 was absolutely ridiculous for most people. And honestly, the podcast was almost an anchor, you know, like it was an anchoring thing. It was something that was, it was one of the few things that felt consistent, you know, and I think that as a podcast fan and listener, in addition to being your editor, like that's an awesome thing that you were able to provide to people, you know, so I appreciate it. So thank you guys.
Oh, thanks.
We are incredibly humbled that you have spent as long as you have with us, been as consistent as you have with us. And so we wanted to have this special episode as a part of our gift, appreciation, and send-off to you for being our podcast editor for the last 4+ years. And so you could have selected any game for us to play. As I said, when we were doing the randomizer for this episode, you had games on there like Kingdom Hearts, Final Fantasy IX, a lot of games that you have a deep connection to, and then some games that you didn't have a deep connection to, but you thought that it would be a good conversation. And for some reason, we ended up with Little Samson. Can you give us a little bit of context as to how this happened?
Yeah, it's actually of the 15 games that I gave you to randomize, this is the only one that I've never played.
What?
That's I've never played great. It, and I didn't know anything about it. The only thing that I knew about this game was that it was the gem that all NES collectors strive to obtain, right? It's worth over $1,000. And I just wanted us as a, I wanted the episode to feel more like a normal episode than a guest episode, where the guest comes on and rightfully so, they have an emotional attachment to the game and they want to, you know, dive into it. And we don't give it any type of NGP status, right? Because it's their game, right? But I wanted this episode to be a little different. So I threw Little Samson on there as a way to answer the question of, why is this game worth over $1,000? Why do people pay over $1,000 for this game? And is it actually worth that? Is this something that people should go out of their way to spend a ridiculous amount of money to obtain?
Well, let's find out by learning what it is. Because we all had to familiarize ourselves with this game this week. So Little Samson is an NES platformer that came out in 1992. Now, perspective here. This was 2 years after the release of the Super Nintendo. So this is like, who cares about NES? I've got the new shiny console. I'm not playing my NES anymore. It's in the closet. So this is late in the lifespan of that console. It was developed by Takaru, and it was published by Taito. We've seen that company many times on the show. I've never heard of Takaru. Have y'all?
I hadn't, but I did a little bit of research this week. It was kind of cool that Takaru, probably, I've got really good pronunciations, but I think I'm right, were a few star employees that had left Capcom thinking that they were being limited by their creativity, you know, and unable to do what they wanted to do, started this own company, this small company, and were able to partner with Taito for this and do a few games that were found some success. They're still not around today. They went off to do other things, but it was a couple of star employees and maybe a few other people that did this.
When those rogue companies come up from like, hey, let's leave this big company and like take what's good and go make a game, that sometimes that can be pretty sick.
Oh, yeah. And especially if it's the best, you know, from those groups.
Yeah.
Well, one of those developers was Akira Kitamura, who was the creator of Mega Man. So he was the OG, because everyone thinks of Keiji Inafune as kind of the creator of Mega Man, but he's not. He actually came on as a designer, but his mentor was the creator of Mega Man, and he was one of those developers. So he went over to Takaru. Okay. And he created Kokoron, which was a game that never made it to the States, but it's awesome, and it's a bit of a,
okay,
it's a bit of a graduation for Mega Man. It's a riff on the format. Really awesome game.
Wow. Well, and if you have played Little Samson with us along this week, you would know that some of this is making sense. It's falling into place because there are a lot of Mega Man inspired things about this game. It's not strictly speaking, but you can tell now that there is a underlying something here. It makes sense.
Oh yeah, it's got Mega Man vibes for sure. Influence, yeah. Certainly, maybe more.
Not Mega Man 3, but the other. Okay, Mega, what, Nolan?
It'll come up again. Don't worry. This is a platformer. I don't think I've said so. There's your Mega Man comparison, but in other ways too. But this is like a true to form platformer. There's no like weird twists. Like we've played some platformers where they try to get creative and do like I don't know, like they mix genres or something and try to make a Frankenstein thing. This is like a platformer's platformer. And the point of this game is traversing through different stages as different characters. So that is the one unique thing from Mega Man, is that you are in control of multiple characters, a la Bucky O'Hare. That was another NES title that I feel like is in the same category of like, never heard of it, but when you play it, you're like, oh, I get it. Like, that's interesting. So we're probably going to make some comparisons there as well. So you have four characters here. Plot is not given to you in the game, but it is as follows. There is this evil prince that is set loose, and the king of the land assembles the Avengers, and the Avengers consist of Little Samson, Kikira the dragon, Gam the golem, and K.O. the mouse. These are your four heroes, and it's really creative the way that they set this up. You aren't just given the Avengers. You have to assemble them. Literally, you have to go through their stages and get your characters, and then from there, you go and fight all the minions of this prince as bosses and going through their stages.
I've got like four things, but Kenny's got one of them, so okay, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, is the actual comparison not Avengers but Fantastic Four?
I mean, they're straight
up
one
of... That's not what Dustin was going to say.
The Thing is in here. Is that right? Yeah. Fantastic
the thing. Yeah, you literally have a rock monster. It's not a stretch to say that the mouse is kind of invisible. I could. There's other bad jokes here, but you got heroes.
Another one of my things was that it's not KO the mouse. If you read the manual, it's KO the enchanted beast, which...
The Fantastic Beast?
Big important. Okay. Big importance here. Another thing is it does tell the story here a little bit, and I think Kenny made a motion there.
No, I was upset when he said it didn't. It's short and to the point, but there's a really great little cutscene that kind of sets up what's going on.
But you're not like, it's not clear what's going on, really.
No, but it implies it enough. Like, it's not overt, but it doesn't need to be.
It implies
these guys
nothing.
Are summoned back,
it implies
and
nothing.
Then you get this...
Oh, please.
I could follow it, and I never follow anything. But what I love is that once you get that little snippet of story, whether it works or it's clear or not, you get this prologue where you get to play each of the characters on their own to kind of learn them before you jump into the game proper, where you can select between those characters, which I thought was genius. It sort of introduces you to each of them without doing the, like, you have to... force me in a level to like swap to this character to figure out what it does. It sort of pre-teaches you about them. I loved that.
Another thing that I was going to mention or ask, and I know the answer, but it's part of the conversation here. Yep. The game is titled Little Samson, at least for our release. It was released as not Little Samson. I don't know why I didn't write it down, but what was it released as? Does anyone have that?
Yeah, it's Holy Bell Legend Lickle. So
Lickle.
Siri Densetsu Lickle. So Samson's name is Lickle. And I think it translates to Legend of the Holy Bell or Legend of the Holy Bells. They each possess a magic bell, and that's what gives them their powers. Yeah.
Yeah. So Legend of the Holy Bells would have been yes. But Little Samson, I think, is a hard no from a lot of people. I think in part because they relate that to the Samson that we all know, whether you're in or out of Christianity, you know of the story of Samson from the Bible. Is there any connection here?
I don't think there's any connection here. But right?
You don't think this is the prequel to the Bible story?
I mean, really don't.
KO is in it.
Yeah, KO is in it, right? I honestly think that if this released as Legend of the Holy Bells, this would be top 10 NES games of all time. Because when you see a title Little Samson, when the Super Nintendo is out, and you see games like F-Zero, and you see games like Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past, and then you're walking past the NES aisle and you see Lil Samson, you're not going to buy that title. You're not going to pick that up. It's too kiddy.
Y'all are right.
It sounds like a kid's game in 1992. It sounds like a bad rapper in 2021.
Yes.
And in either case, it's not super appealing. And this had a lot to compete with. They didn't advertise this heavily. It was SNES era. And so despite the probably mostly positive things we're going to say about this game, spoiler alert, this game did not do super well at release.
Gameplay.
As said, this game begins with a prequel of sorts. You play a stage per character. It was really cool to watch Nolan's first play because you have to kind of make sense of what's going on. You're not immediately thrown into the game. You see a little cutscene, and then you've got four different stages to choose from. But as you're switching between those stages, you're seeing four different characters that look completely different from one another. We said their names, but Little Samson is this little boy. It's the character on the kind of front of this game. It's the namesake of the game, the titular character, if you will. And he's just a little boy that when you get into his stage, he jumps and throws little bells. I believe they're bells.
Yeah,
I thought going rocks, along, but yeah, whatever.
Going along with the theme of this game. And we can talk more about him because his little jump animation is adorable.
Yeah, he jumps and spins.
You've got the second one, which is Kakira the Dragon Lord, which is a little dragon that shoots fireballs from its mouth, but they kind of arc upwards. You also find out that you can charge up the dragon's fire ability, and that does more damage. And then the dragon can hover, and it doesn't slip on ice. I think that's another thing it doesn't do. And then you've got Gam the Rock Lord, or the Thing from the Fantastic Four, who is slower than the rest, but has more HP, and I think does more damage with its hits.
Yeah,
and
he hits real hard.
Can attack in the four cardinal directions, and other enemies cannot. He can also walk on spikes. And then you've got K.O., the Enchanted Beast, which some would call a mouse. And it has less health, but runs faster than the rest and can stick to walls and drops little, Nolan, you said it, little of the it's Samus poop. Bombs.
Yeah.
No, it's not that. It's the Samus it's bombs. Poop. No.
And it can, I like Nolan's way better.
It can little hurt enemies.
Oops. Explosive. Okay.
Can y'all stop saying that?
I'll say it again.
Tom, will you bleep that out each time you say right. the POO yeah. word? No, don't. So you've got those four creatures, and you play their four stages before they assemble in a cutscene. But then there's a little contention there between two of them.
Drama on the squad.
Yeah. The dragon tries to prevent the boy from taking part. Is that what vibe y'all get there?
Like that's the vibe I got initially, and what like, she was like put in her place. But I actually think the lore is she was wanted to be the leader, and
love
was
this.
Like, let me lead this thing, and then they had to like fight for leadership position.
Dude, this is definitely the developers projecting real life scenarios that happened when they were developing into the game. There was like somebody butting heads. They're like, no, I'm the game designer. And then they put that fight in there.
Is this a metaphor for leaving Capcom?
Yes.
Yeah.
Dude, it is. There's a no deeper meaning here behind the poop. Okay. And we'll discover.
Stop.
It. Yeah. We got to dig in there and discover it.
The four creatures operate very different from one another. I think a very obvious question is, which one did you enjoy playing most?
Tom, go first.
Yeah, I'll go with Kakira, the dragon. Once I realized that she had a charge shot, I actually did not realize that until maybe 40% into the game. I just didn't do it because I was playing traditional Mega Man style of just mashing the button, right? Once I realized I could hold it in and it would change colors, and then I would have this like super powered shot. The game actually gets super easy after that because it's a way overpowered shot. But I thought the hover was really awesome, and it's different than most hovers where you can go high and then drop down, but not all the way down. You can kind of drop down halfway or quarters of the way, and then keep hovering, which I thought was really interesting. You know, it's not like Princess Peach's hover in Super Mario 2, where once you let go, you're done.
Right.
I didn't know about the charge shot either, and you know how I found out? The game taught me, because when I fought Kikiro, like that first fight, she was using charge shots, and I was like, And so I tried it next time, and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Like, I think that's part of the reason. Obviously, there's a story reason, and the Capcom, the underneath reason that we know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think part of it is to teach... Because that's the only one that, like, they knew as developers that you could miss this, because you're going to figure out the other people's stuff because it's just tapping the attack button, I forgot to say, I guess KO can also run on water, shallow water. Mm-hmm. But you can find some of that stuff out, but what you're not going to find out probably or might be difficult to is that charge shot. I think that's part of the reason they do that. So I agree with you, Tom. It's like not even a close comparison to me. Really? Once I started using the Dragon Lord, I stuck with her because she is far superior to the rest. And you can not only attack enemies more quickly because you have that charge shot, but you can fly through a lot of the stage because that hover lasts a good amount of time and allowed me to get through a lot of the areas. And I think you're understanding, listener, that... After you play those prequel stages, if I haven't said, you then can switch between those four characters at any time on any stage.
Right, on the fly. This is not choose a character to play through the level. This is hot swap between characters, even sort of using their cumulative life, because if you're losing life in one character, you don't want to die with that character. You can then swap to somebody who does still have their life bar. And so lots of utility there and lots of choices about who do I use in what situations and why, which always feels really good.
And you can swap in the air, which like mid-jump, yes, which I thought was incredible from a game mechanic.
Which the game sets up, the developers set up for you to do that from time to time, because you can only get to a certain area by climbing KO. On the ceiling using the mouse with, or, you know, the KO, and then you need to drop, but it spikes, so you need to change into GAM on the way down. It's absolute brilliant design in that. And you mentioned earlier, Nolan, but it's Bucky O'Hare, and I think it's an apt comparison, not only because it's on the same console around the same time, but you are able to switch between those four characters at any time on the stage, maybe not during the drop, but they all have their own unique abilities and reasons for using them on a stage.
Dustin, you asked our favorite characters, and then we only got halfway through the conversation.
We're still in
Nolan,
it.
Nolan, who is yours?
Oh, yeah. I'm not surprised that y'all are saying it's like Kikaru, not even close, based on her abilities and cute. Mine's Samson. Because the way they designed the the physics engine, like the mechanics, it feels better than almost every NES game. And what I mean, I explained in my first play, basically it feels more like a fighting game or like Smash Bros, where like you can jump at different height levels, which is not revolutionary, but I felt so like I had so much freedom, like the weight he had, like how quickly he came back to the ground. Like I could just jump and like there's a rhythm to it that really works for me. And he can grab on walls and do wall jumps, and he can swing from the bottom of platforms too. He's really OP. Like his attack is meh, but I had so much fun controlling Samson, so he's my favorite.
All right, we hit everybody's favorite, so let us
fight you.
Kenny.
No, not making that joke. Easily KO for me.
Yeah.
Absolute
favorite. I can see that. We know.
Just fun. Like the unique mechanic of dropping those little bombs. And then you scurry around and get places nobody else can, and you're small to dodge things. And just, he's real adorable, too. The dragon is also cute as all get out. Don't get me wrong. They did an amazing job with these animations and making them fun and appealing, all of them. But I really loved getting to play as KO. In fact, had a really hard time, not a really hard time, but had a little bit of a hard time with the first boss, until I swapped to KO to get through that first phase of the boss, because those bombs are just really strong. But again, lots of just choices there, which is so fun.
Well, it's interesting to have a character like that that's pretty much all utility. I mean, offense is KO's least important stat or purpose. And so when you have an all utility character, it makes a platformer look at it completely different. And so I loved having that option. And we already mentioned it, but I think we should talk a little more about the swapping between the way that the level design is intentionally made for you to get creative, because there's not one way to do everything. For some things, yes, you have to use KO to get through a little area where there's like spikes on the ground or something, or you have to use the golem for something.
It's very few things though where it forces it.
Yes.
Usually it's going to give you a couple of different ways of traversing the big pit. Fly over it, you know, walk over on the spikes, or like platform your way over it. And that way, if you've played one of these characters and lost most of their lives and been forced to be playing sort of a separate character, you can still get through the game. It doesn't limit that you have to have somebody, which was a really important decision to make.
The downside to that, yes, the stages are like designed in a cool way, and some of the upgrades, like you have to get creative. The stages are so short in this game, like noticeably very short. If we're going to use the Mega Man comparison or even the Bucky O'Hare comparison, they're just kind of flat, and they're over before you know it. And I mean, I guess there's two ways to look at it. Like if you enjoy bossing a lot, you'll get to bosses a lot, but are a lot faster. But I just wish every time I was like, man, that stage was cool, I wish it was a little longer.
Nolan's just hungry. He's wanting the golden corral of platformers. Like, I just want to keep eating. I'm fine with it being good, you know? Like, yeah, give me a small portion, but make it excellent.
Give me something good that's KO sized and I will enjoy it. So
there
Nolan,
it is.
Okay, but here's the thing. Did you beat it, Nolan? Did you play all the way through? Because some of this, I think there's a variety of level length, and some of them are fairly lengthy and have multiple parts, you know, where you leave one area and go into a second area of the same kind of stage.
Yeah. The last couple, really the last few, are significantly longer than the first few, but overall, yeah, I was just wanting more. But yes, I did beat it.
So Nolan, I know you, so you beat it. Kenny, did you beat it?
Yeah, I got through it all the way.
Okay. And then Tom, you beat it a couple of times?
Yeah, my first run was on easy. And then I did the normal. Yeah.
Oh, I haven't done normal.
I think that's a good conversation to have, because easy and harder difficulty on this were actually really well implemented.
Well, hold on. Before you even go forward, because this is interesting. Nolan, you did not do normal?
No.
You got to do normal,
which means that
you missed out.
Did not beat the game.
Well, completely. That's usually the case. Like hard mode has a secret ending or something.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Maybe it's usual. I don't know. But the easy mode, you beat the game, but you have a whole nother level with the boss rush isn't even on easy, is it?
It's not. Yeah.
The boss rush is on normal. So you go through some of the bosses that you already fought, and then you fight the final boss in normal mode.
Okay, maybe I'll do that. The only reason I didn't is because Diablo 2 Remake came out, but it was really hard for me to like put the game down this week. It was one of those where I wanted to 100% it, but then I was like, I don't have time.
Tom, which was more enjoyable for you, the easy mode or the normal mode?
Yeah, so I played this game just like I would have played it in 1992, where I did the easy mode first. No save states or anything, played through it. I used a NES Dogbone controller, you know, USB controller for this one. And then I used a Game Genie code for infinite energy, which is exactly what I would have done
That's
when I was
hilarious.
8 years old, right? And I did that for normal, right? So I breezed through normal, cheating my way through, you know, but it was fun.
That.
Yeah, but I wanted to experience that final stage, you know, that secret stage. So I just wanted to check it out. So I blew right through it.
Is it way harder or is it?
Yeah, one of the things that I noticed right off the bat was it caps how high your energy can go. We didn't really talk about that, but you can boost. You start out with a limited amount of energy and then you get those. I think they're called crystal balls in the manual, and the crystal balls boost your energy, and everybody has a different limit, which I thought was really interesting. You know, so for the golem, you can go super high because he's your tank, you know, but even KO is limited by how high he can go, you know, so normal caps, I think, how high your energy can go, whereas the limits are lifted a little bit higher for easy. Yeah.
And then I guess maybe they hit harder potentially.
And then just different monsters as well. Easy has less mobs.
Oh, okay.
I think those are the only two differences, you just have more stuff to navigate, more stuff going on the screen on normal mode.
Speaking of the mobs, the variety is insane. They're detailed and like all different. They consistently kept introducing new enemies to you throughout the stages, and I'm like, y'all gotta stop at some point, like reuse stuff, and they do, but come on,
at least a dozen, and I may be super undercutting it, different varieties of just normal trash enemies to fight. And they all operate differently. Like one is like this gelatin blob that then either spits out or turns into this rolling ball that comes and attacks you, which is just so different from the three flying little dragon things that spit fire at you, you know?
Or like the skulls that spin and shoot, or the things that crawl just on the top that shoot.
Right.
There's a ton of variety and a ton of different ways to kill each of those depending on which character you're playing.
Suicidal skeletons.
Kills everything.
There's just a huge variety of different ones, and I do agree that they do reuse them, you know, later on, but I think that's a good gameplay mechanic, like reusing them, not over the top, but bringing them back, and now you know how to fight them easily or better. And I also thought the difficulty curve was done fairly well.
Yep.
Favorite boss.
Easy for me.
Oh, go.
Well, I don't know its name. But
yeah, I don't either, but maybe you could describe
it. I want to save the boss design, like physical look for aged when we talk about that.
Yes, but yes, yes.
The dragon, just that massive dragon that takes the entire right-hand side of the screen that's flying, and you only have like three little square platforms to be able to jump on and traverse through, while this dragon has a few different attacks, charges you from time to time. I thought it looked beautiful, and I thought it was a fun fight.
Yep.
I'll answer the opposite question. No. Least favorite boss, which is what you asked.
That's not
course.
What I asked.
I didn't have a strong opinion. I liked a lot of the bosses. Least favorite boss was the one that shoots the stupid orbs, and then they come at you in a wave, and you just have to dodge them.
Yeah, that one's tough.
The whole time of him being removed from the battle the whole time just made it feel like a really, really long fight when all of the others weren't and felt real good. That was the only one that kind of
the final
me.
Boss?
No. It's the thing that it becomes corporeal for a little bit, and then it goes into this really small thing and shoots out all these balls off screen that then come across on the left and right.
That might be the final
that
boss.
That was final.
Easy.
Was that final?
Yeah, that's final
boss. On easy. Got you.
And that's my answer.
Is your favorite?
Yes, because Little Samson's my favorite. That's like probably the best character used there.
You like dodging...
There's just a rhythm to that fight that just worked for me with Samson. I love dodging those balls. And like, I agree, Kenny, when it's like removed from the stage, I love that because it makes it feel like kind of drawn out. And it was a great fight. It was a good final fight.
Samson has a nice little crouch too. So you can crouch under those balls coming through. And like you said, with the jump mechanic, having varying levels, like that is a good Samson boss battle. My favorite was definitely the dragon. It was ripped straight out of Mega Man. I think it's Mega Man 2. Like, that is a Mega Man 2 Wily stage boss battle completely. Yeah. But I thought it was really cool to see Kakira, you know, like little dragon versus big dragon, sprite for sprite. Yeah, it was nice. And my least favorite was Kenny's least favorite. Yeah, for sure. Like, too drawn out, especially for the end of the game. But I guess, like, that is what a final boss battle should feel like, you know, drawn out and lengthy and challenging, so it makes sense. But up until that point, the game felt so smooth, and then it just felt like a bit of a drag.
A drag, yeah. A dragon.
Aged.
So I think this is one of the games that is the best example of aging that we've ever seen. Let me make a couple of arguments, and then we'll get into talking about how it actually looks. Mm-hmm. But this game was not very well known on release, but has increased in popularity over time as it's become known as sort of a good platformer on this console. Early on, it was just a game you could go out and buy, and it has increased in value like exponentially over time. It's just literally a game that I think is more popular today than it was when it came out. It's the ultimate sort of cult classic, and that's just fun for me as a talking point.
I follow that, and I agree. I can't really name another one, especially on the show, where age has helped it as much as this game has. Just if for nothing else, just it being known. But I still didn't know about it. I still hadn't heard about it. So it's not like it's like,
sure, it's not wildly popular.
Yeah,
this isn't Super Mario Brothers 3.
Sure, and it would never be that. But I do think that time has just elevated all those stats, like where it was like the underdog, and now it's like actually you need to look at me and really and see that I can contend with the greats on that console.
But there's reasons why people look at it and are like, this is a gem that most people missed. And one of those is the graphics. We said that it came out late in the NES life cycle, and that's one of the reasons why it was not known at the time. But these are some of the best, if not the best, graphics that I've ever seen on the NES.
They are the best.
The amount of detail and precision, the amount... I mentioned the dragon as one of my favorite bosses, the big dragon, and part of that reason is the amount of incredible finite detail that they're able to put on that, on a game that I know they only have so limited sprites and palettes that they're working with. is absurd. And I felt this week that the game felt graphically like NES. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But the absolute limits, exceeding the limits of the NES. It doesn't feel like Super Nintendo. It doesn't feel like something else. It feels like NES, but in the very best way.
Yep. These are the best graphics on the NES. They're better than Bucky O'Hare. They're better than Mega Man. They're better than... The variety is crazy. That final stage, the like castle, like the stained glass windows in the backdrop, every stage looked vastly different. It looked like Genesis at times. It had color, but it was popping everywhere. And the animations, it looks insane, but still NES. Like, this is what it should have looked like all along.
Super, super well done. I almost felt like the bosses felt a little out of place because they almost went so realistic with them. And then you had these like cute little sprites. You had Samson and this dragon, and it almost felt like it was trying to be different games. Like that dragon, but in like a horror game for me, you know, like kind of works, or a game that's hyper realistic. I wish it had been a little bit more consistent in its style, but they absolutely did an amazing job. The bosses look great. The other sprites for your main characters look great. I wish it had been a little bit more uniform, and my personal preference is for that more cartoony look.
It felt Final Fantasy-ish in the sense that you have these little chibi sprites, but then you have these super detailed bosses, you know, that are way larger than your actual heroes. But I thought that, you know, I would definitely agree that this is some of the best sprite work on the NES. Although I'll add a point of contention. I don't think it pushed the NES to its max in terms of graphics, right? Like, there's no parallax scrolling. There's no auto-scrolling levels, you know, where you have a lot of movement happening. I think it did sprite work incredibly well. I think it did backgrounds incredibly well. I think the immediate spin that you see with Samson, like his little spin jump, is one of the cutest things so in any adorable. NES game. It's Fluid. Absolutely incredible. Like, the animations are really great, but like, I think the best graphical sequence was hidden in the game. Did any of you guys play the crab sequence?
I did just experience it. Listen, guys, on the I think the second boss, if you fall down the waterfall gap,
yes,
you're taken to a whole new area where there's a crab sequence. I didn't fully play it, but what was that, Tom?
So you fall to the bottom of the waterfall, and then to actually complete the stage, you bypass the boss battle altogether. But to complete the stage, you have to ride on this animated crab, and it auto-scrolls through the level, and there's a lot of different obstacles that you have to overcome. And you have to do a lot of switching.
And you just have one character, right?
That's right. Just have Samson. Yeah, for that sequence. It's interesting, really interesting. But it made me think, why didn't more levels have those types of sequences, you know, where you are forced to then, you know, kind of ride on a creature or go through some type of unique obstacle or unique set of obstacles? And that sequence pushed the graphics even further. But if you never fell down the waterfall, you never saw it. Sure. You know, it's just kind of hidden.
Yeah. And apparently there are a few other optional things that, depending on how you exit a game, a level, stage. You go through like different options. I didn't see that personally because I just obviously went through my playthrough. Sure. But there's a little bit of depth there included in this game, which is not just in this case, which is a really cool thing to include also.
This is one of those games that for me, it's like after playing... For me to think, oh, I wish they would have done this, baffles me, or even to hear it from other, like, I understand what y'all are saying, but like,
yeah,
the amount of excellence that this game is for to get to the end and be like, oh, but I wish they could have done this. I'm like, man, because I think that this is a technical marvel, and I agree with you. Yeah, no parallax scrolling and limited auto scrolling and they could have done a few things, but what they did, I thought, was so intentional, so artfully done I wasn't lacking anything at the end of this game.
I'm with you. The other thing too that like kind of, I mean, I guess we should hit on the music part. There's something they do unique here. Each character has their own song, so when you switch to that character, the music switches. And I really like this choice because it kind of just puts you in that mode, like KO mode. When you hear that track come on, you're like, all right, I'm a mouse. Sorry, a beast.
Enchanted beast.
Did you guys like that, or did you just want the track, the stage music?
I didn't like it. I appreciate the idea of it. I think if they'd had a unique track for each of their like intro levels, and then maybe like played a little jingle when you switched or something so that you got some of that character vibe, I ended up getting too much of each character and feeling like my atmosphere didn't match the level because they didn't do like a level track. Now, a few of the later levels, I do think they swap to like a soundtrack that's not character driven, but the swapping back and forth, it felt cute to me, but I felt like I was a little less engaged with like the atmosphere. So I actually wish they hadn't done this, but appreciate why they did. It you know, gave even more appeal to like reasons you might want to play one character or the other, because you're getting a track that goes with them.
Tom, I absolutely loved it for the first three levels. and then after that, and I think this also to complement what Kenny was saying, you have these really awesome stages that are designed, you know, and they're thematic. You know, you have the volcano, you have the ice palace, and I just feel like they could have had really complementary soundtrack tracks, you know, to go with each of those. But because they committed to having a unique theme per character, if they wanted to have variations on those themes, they'd have to do four per stage. You'd run out of space. You wouldn't have enough memory, you know, to go and do that. But I thought that the Gollum track, like I could sit and listen to that for days.
That was my problem. That was my favorite track, and I used him the absolute least.
My least favorite character, my most favorite track. And it's like, you just want to listen to some of those tracks. And for Kakira, you know, I used it so much that it got repetitive, you know, in certain stages.
I totally get that. I do think that I thought all themes were good.
Yeah.
Varying degrees of good, but I thought they were all good. So they were all, at least, like you said, Tom, maybe the first few levels, they were enjoyable. Yeah, so maybe they could have had music for each stage, but at least on some of those final stages where like the stakes were highest, there was a thematic, and each boss, I believe, had boss themes. So you do get a break every now and again, but yeah, I listened to Kakira's theme song the entire game because that's who I used just nonstop. Yeah. So I do think that. Now, I don't think we mentioned the number, but this game is known today. In fact, a lot of our listeners thought we were crazy to not have heard of this game. I don't know if y'all know by now, but here's 6 years in. Let me let you in on a secret. We're not experts, professionals, or anything of the sort.
I know
there
nothing.
Are people that listen to our show knowing, like, and you know, just scoff at us because they're the true retro gamers, and we're just fakes.
Yeah.
And then there are people that have probably left the show long ago listening to us because they realized this.
Yes.
We're not fakes. We're fans. We love old retro games.
I'm fake.
And we love playing them, but we have a lot to discover because, you know, we haven't gone deep and don't have some of that knowledge. And so hopefully that makes for entertaining episodes as we get to learn this stuff and experience it for the first time.
Or you can just be mad at us and leave. But
yeah, that's also an option.
We have learned this week a lot about Little Samson. And one of the things that we have learned is that it is an ultra rare game. There are not a lot of them. And because of the rarity and the quality and for whatever other reasons, this is the most expensive game to obtain to date. So we've got a few purists that play along and listen along with us, and they'll only play the game along with us if they can obtain a copy for themselves. Last week, without knowing this knowledge, I was like, find a copy of Little Samson and play it along with
and
us.
And they're like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's not possible because, let me say the price, used $1,774. New, $15,450.
So this is the most expensive game?
So it's the most expensive like vanilla game that doesn't have some sort of like historical like value outside of that. There's specific like early versions of Mario and like pristine condition versions of specific games that have sold for more. There's tournament carts that have sold for more and those kinds of things. But I think just the like vanilla title of just on its own, it is that game. I think my understanding is this is the most expensive generally.
Dang. Well, if you have this game, you can send it to me. I'll take it from you. I mean, I'll take it off your hands.
See, that's why we wouldn't be good like gaming collectors. Maybe I'm just speaking for myself. If I had a new Little Samson, I would no longer have a new Little Samson.
I'd have $15,000.
I'd have $15,000. But Tom, you're somewhat of a purist, a collector. You did Nintendo Power, you know, collected some of those magazine stuff. If you had a copy of Little Samson, are you... You've got Nintendo Power right there. The one Nintendo Power, if I understand correctly.
No, was the game.
I think he held up the copy that does have a general walkthrough of Little Samson.
We've got a 6-page spread here of Little Samson in volume 40. This is September 1992, the Felix the Cat issue of Nintendo Power. I'm a collector of Nintendo Power.
Yeah.
I am not a collector of carts.
Okay. Yeah. So you, if that's you had awesome. A new cart of Little Samson, would you keep it?
I would also have $15,000.
Yeah. Nice. All right. Yeah. Well, don't send us your carts because now you'll know what we'll do with them.
Final thoughts.
At the end of each and every one of our episodes, we determine whether or not the game gets our vote for New Game Plus status or not. It receives 2/3 of the vote to swing one way or the other. It's our general thumbs up or thumbs down. It has to have the majority here. And we typically do not do this for guest episodes. We just like to talk about the game that the guest wanted to talk about and leave it at that. But Tom, in the nature of the show, said, no, we are, of course, giving this our vote one way or the other. Tom, we'll let you have the final word. We'll start with the one that did the first play this week. So, Nolan, what were your final thoughts?
Final thoughts are extremely positive. I obviously didn't know about this game, but it's another Bucky O'Hare situation. So much so that it's absolutely... If we were to do another top 10 on the podcast, this would be in my top 5. It is a purist platformer. I said that earlier, and that's what really stood out to me is how, like, yes, it didn't have the, like, scrolling segments and maybe it didn't utilize a lot of the other, like, things that platformers did at the time. But controlling the characters and each character having their own style, play style, and way to approach each stage and each boss fight... made the game so enjoyable, and it has so much charm. It has a bad title, but it's so good, and I see why it's so expensive, because if there aren't many copies and it's this good, like, this is pinnacle NES that no one's ever played. It is so good. New Game Plus.
That's one yes. Kenny, are you going to be a divisive individual here?
Probably not really divisive. I do think, and called it as I was sort of prepping for the show here, that you guys are probably going to overhype this game relative to where I think it is. I don't think this is the best game we've played. I wouldn't put it in my top 5. I probably wouldn't put it in my top 10. But it is a very, very good game. And I think it's one of my strongest NGPs that I've given yet, for the reasons I pointed out in Aged. I think this is a better game to play today on some level than it was back then. Because you're like, I'm playing this thing that's super expensive and rare. You know, I'm playing this thing that wasn't popular, but now I get to see how wonderful it was. We get to know about some of that history that we talked about. And there's a million reasons to play this game, including the fact that it stands up on its own as a very, very good game. Huge NGP from me. Very solid game. I had a lot of fun.
That's two. I would say that this is Mega Man platforming, but not as difficult. It is Bucky O'Hare, but graphically superior. It is, I don't know if it's top tier platforming necessarily, because I'm able to do it. So it's not as difficult as it can be on some of these platforming things. I'm not the best platformer. But the variety, the replay value, to be not only to be able to change the characters that you use for certain sections of the game, but as we said, there's alternate levels that can totally be skipped if you don't know about them, and you can go through and play those again. There are so many. You can play on easy and beat it, then you can play it on normal with a slightly more game and difficulty. There's just so much replay value here. It's beautiful to look at, beautiful to listen to. Okay, yes, I admit, maybe there are a few things that could have been better. The title, chief among them. But this is an excellent, stellar game. It's one of those games where you can just feel that there was a team behind it that loved it. They weren't recreating something. They were using some of the best of and creating an absolute treat. I hate it for them, but I kind of love that there's a history with this game where it wasn't widely received, but now it is this gem that is worth $15,000 new. I don't know if it's worth that, but it is worth a lot because it is an excellent, excellent title. And I'm so glad that we randomly got to play this one rather than Final Fantasy IX or Kingdom Hearts. We'll get to that eventually. But it was fun to be able to play with you for our, you know, farewell with you, Tom. So I absolutely give it my vote for New Game Plus status, which goes to you, Tom. It'd be a travesty at this point if you brought this game and then ended up not giving it your vote. But go ahead.
We'll definitely go 4 out of 4 today. I definitely think that this gets New Game Plus status. When you think about NGP status as being whether or not this is worth your time, this is absolutely worth your time, right? And I'll be critical of this game. And the reason why I'll be critical of it is because I would put this game probably low in my top 25, top 30 NES games. But with just a few tweaks, I think this has the potential to be one of the greatest NES games ever created, right? Like, call it Legend of the Holy Bells instead of Little Samson.
Boom.
Give us cutscenes with actual dialogue, right? Give us an intro with actual dialogue. Let us know why Samson and Kikira are fighting right before the game even gets started. Like, there's history, there's backstory in history that is in the manual that never gets exposed in the game. I think KO and Gom have history, the golem, where he was a thief who tried to steal a potion from KO, who was actually a wizard. And in stealing that potion, he turned into the monster. And after he became a monster, KO drank a potion and turned into a mouse. That's all in the manual. You don't get any of that.
That's the best game of all time.
That would be amazing, right? Like, they have a history and you don't even know that. You just have the Avengers Assemble kind of prologue, right? But there's no backstory. And I think if just a little bit of backstory, a little bit of music variation, although there's not a bad track on this game, like, this could be the greatest NES game of all time. And I think that's the issue with this game is it's published by Taito and it's developed by a super small company, Takeru. And if this game was published by Capcom or Nintendo, it would have been polished to the level that we expect from those companies, right? So I feel like Little Samson, NGP Plus, 100%. It has all the ingredients to be the best NES game of all time. They just didn't leave it in the oven long enough. If they baked it a little bit more, like, this would absolutely be one of the greatest games of all time. But it is totally worth your time. At an hour, 90 minutes, like, you can blow through this game. Easy mode is actually easy. How often do you see that on NES? Like, NES games are NES hard. This game is actually easy. 100%, go play this game.
Which means Little Samson is New Game Plus certified. But what did you think? We had 356 votes on YouTube. 27% said yes. 8% said no. And 65% have never played it before.
Yep, that tracks.
Because they just don't know about it. They just don't know about it. And then we had many people write in. We'll only be able to include a few thoughts here. Kakeo-san said, man, gotta have to play. I wanted to start with this. Actually, negative review. Man, gonna have to play devil's advocate here, aren't I? Little Samson is a game that falls really flat to me. I started the game and was met with great sprite work and excellent animation for NES, but the more I played, I realized that the game is completely style over substance. The level design is boring, the music is repetitive, and even halfway through, I'm seeing a ton of repeated enemy sprites. I know it's NES and they have limited space, but other games like Super Mario Bros. 3 and the entire Mega Man series, which you just called on two of the greats, have way more variety in enemy designs. I feel like the only reason why it's considered a hidden gem is because it's rare, which means you can't get a hold of it without coughing up thousands of dollars. And it has good graphics and animation, while some people, in my opinion, ignore the single defining factor for NES games: gameplay. This game isn't a hidden gem, it's just hidden.
No, That's a terrible take. What? The gameplay's great. The level design, they didn't beat the game. Stop it.
I do think that, like, comparing it to which you should, but then you should end up comparing it to Mega Man and then Super Mario Bros. 3, which, again, two of the greatest games on the system. Like, it's going to be in the top five of, right. of, you know, most people. You sure, maybe it's not as good for some people in some of those areas, but again, you're comparing it to the ones that did it the greatest of the great. And so I think that comparing to the rest of the NES catalog, you're going to land where we land. I don't know. We saw some of the same issues that Kakeo-san saw, but we definitely didn't swing that same way that he ended up swinging. Interesting. But the remainder of the commentary were all on the positive. Super Gamer Guy said, Little Samson embodies the term hidden gem. It's really a shame how expensive it is nowadays, because if it were cheap as regular copies of something like Super Mario Bros., it would be widely accepted as one of the best NES games, period. Hmm. Graphics, music, and gameplay are all refined beyond belief, due in part to its late release on the NES. And the game is a decent length, too, with around an hour plus of content, not even counting playing normal mode in addition to easy. I find it hard to believe that anybody in the world could wholeheartedly dislike this game, and as it was endearing to me right from the start, NGP for this one all the way.
So y'all think that if it had more copies out there available, that it would be higher rated? Because I felt like one of y'all said that, and then Super Gamer Guy said it too. Like, I guess that makes sense.
I think it would have been more popular initially.
Oh, yeah.
If it was just easier to, yeah. you know, if everyone and their dog had a copy of Super Mario Brothers 3, partly because it was popular and, you know, huge publisher, but like it was playground popular because it was everywhere. You know, this is both the time and the amount of release and even budget to like advertise it just means that, you know, this wasn't on the radar in that way.
I think it's timing too. I mean, at this exact moment, you could go out and play Super Castlevania 4, which is ridiculous, right? Like the sprite working Super Castlevania yep. 4 and the music there.
True.
It's unbelievable to think that those two games were released at relatively the same time. Mm-hmm. And I think that if this was released, you know, 6 to 12 months earlier, you wouldn't be comparing those types of experiences. You know, mm-hmm. this yeah. would have been a pinnacle, absolutely. You know, for the system.
This dropped in 89. It would have just like blown everybody away.
Totally.
Oh, yeah, of course. Then we had a message from Daniel, who was writing us from Spain. He said hey. He wants to felicitate us because of how we made him feel last week.
Oh,
he said, I've been listening to your most prominent episodes for some time and loved it, so that I decided to go all through the podcast from the beginning. As far as Little Samson, it's a totally unknown game for me. Felt great about the graphics. Samson even blinks. Like blinks and platforming mechanics. It's kind of like Wonder Boy featuring Mega Man. Only the music was a little repetitive, but not bad. And the story could have been better told, I think. Anyway, I think it was a good game that passed by unnoticed. I couldn't finish this week, but I want to give it another try.
You should. And do normal mode, apparently. Don't be like me.
I mean, do both.
Do both.
The second one with Game Genie codes.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Do normal mode, but cheat.
Which we didn't even talk. There's a password system here, and uh-huh. it's not a convoluted password system. It's only a 4-character password system that yeah. does put you back where you were, but not with the same power-ups that you had. So I don't know if I mean, it's still we'll good that there's there. Some kind of system there, but yeah. Thank you for sending in your thoughts on the Retro Game of the Week. You can do that each and every week to ngppodcast@gmail.com or drop them in the commentary channel on our Discord. We'd love to include your thoughts as a part of our episode each and every week. We are not, at this moment, going to randomly select because, as we've already announced, next week is episode 300. It is our 6-year anniversary. We've already talked about it. You can join us on October 2nd between 10 and noon and do a live call-in of sorts. We'd love to have you as a part of that. And then from that, we'll randomize the game that we're going to be playing for episode 301, our first game into year 7 as a podcast. Episode 300 will also be the final episode that Tom edits for us.
No. Well,
the traditional, we might call him a little bit down the way every once in a while, but this is his final time with us. And so not only did we want to have episode 299 as kind of a send-off for you, we wanted to just take a moment here and sincerely thank you from the bottom of our heart for all that you've done for our podcast throughout the years. We are super famous today because of you.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom. Thanks for making us...
Nolan's wrong.
No, seriously. No, I think our community, we talk about this a lot on the show, like our Discord community. We talk a lot about games every week. We talk a lot about gaming news, pretty much everything. And it's always been understood that, Tom, you were just part of that, like that group, that family. And I think everyone in that community respects and also appreciates what you did for the show. So, we couldn't have done any of this stuff without an editor, and much less without a like excellent editor like you. So thank you.
Yeah, I'll second everything that they just said. And we've already given you so much kudos for the time and just the commitment. That's huge and huge. But on top of that, amazing guests too. What a fun episode and a fun game to talk about, and like insightful commentary and easy to talk to. And just so thanks for all of that and for today. We really just appreciate it.
And I wanted to say one other thing. It honestly is, it's one of my favorite memories of our podcast, but I think still it is my favorite moment of our podcast was something that you did that we didn't know about. It was for, I believe, one of our anniversary episodes, and you had personally reached out to our community and asked them if they wanted to send in messages or call in, and you set up a thing where they could call in and leave a voice message to us. Saying what our podcast and what we do meant to them. And then it surprised us. We didn't know it was going to be a part of that episode. And I just remember listening through there and becoming emotional at being able to hear from our podcasting is a one way hobby. Mm-hmm. We produce it in silence and send it out. And then the people that listen to it, enjoy it and feel like they're a part of us, that they're friends with us, but the three of us don't always get to feel that necessarily. We've got to feel it more through our Discord community, but we don't always get to feel that. So to be able to hear that from our community was so incredible.
Powerful moment,
and that was you putting that together. And so thank you for that, which is just a small piece of what you've meant to us three and us as a community. We can't thank you enough.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Totally. I came in through the community. I was a fan and a listener before I started editing for the show. And I came in alongside, you know, not as early as Bill and Antonin and you know, Jesse and some of those community members. But, you know, I definitely remember coming through. I've been a Patreon supporter. You know, just this has been one of the best gaming communities that I've been a part of. And I've been a podcaster and a huge fan of podcasting for a decade now. And it's just been an absolute pleasure to be a part of your show. Not going to go far. You know, I'll still be in the community. Anybody who's listening, you can catch me in Discord. I don't have a fancy username. It's just Tom in there. So you'll see me in there. It's been an absolute pleasure. And if you're ever in a bind and you need somebody to hop on a quick edit, just give me a shout. You know, I'll always be around to help out. And I also want to thank you guys for letting me have fun with it. That made my job a lot easier, you know, just putting little Easter eggs at the end of episodes. And every time you guys would like sing in between segments, not thinking that those little bits are going to end up in the show, I'd managed to find a way to put them in the show until I could tell that it was audibly annoying you guys that you could no longer sing. But it's little things like that I think let me have fun with it and enjoy it and personalize it and get feedback from your listeners and just keep it interesting, keep it fun.
Well, we appreciate you. We're so glad you're part of the community. We, the three of us have put together a gift that we're going to be sending you just as a tangible way of saying thank you for being a part of our community in this way. And we're so grateful that you're going to continue to remain a part of the community. And yeah, you're not going far. So this is not a goodbye. It's not even until next time. It's like, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Talk to you tomorrow.
You
know? Yeah.
Right.
See you tomorrow. Just in a different capacity. So from all of us, thank you so, so much.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, this community we keep talking about, it's pretty great. It happens in Discord. You can go to ngppodcast.com and click join us on Discord to get started. Yeah,
on Discord.
Do that.
You can also be like Tom, which after hearing from him, you want to be even more than you knew. And support us on Patreon. Like our huge and growing group of producer-level supporters, including the following people: Amarley and Anthony, Austin, Ben, Bethany Fox, Brunt, Carrie, Captain Protein, Dan the Man, DB Muffet, Francesca, Hi, I'm Josh, Joey, Jordan, Jordan, Justin, Corey, Lorelai, Maximum, Mr. Lattes, Nawel, Secret Duck of Evermore, Shauna, Thomas, Unbedable, Wardonis, William, and Zion. You're forcing me to go fast because there's so many of you. Thank you, thank you. Big thank you to Timothy for joining us as a patron for the first time ever today.
Thanks.
Yeah. We, of course, want to thank our director level supporters, Anthony, Bro Jim, Garlisle, and...
Not Anthony, Antonin.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Antonin. What am I thinking? If there's an Anthony out there, you're our honorary director for the day. Antonin. I literally had my mouse over my notes and can't read, apparently. But you miss, guys. I said and because this week we have picked up a new director-level supporter for the very first time. Great. Want to make sure he gets plenty of attention for that wonderful above and beyond sort of support. So Zachary, thank you for becoming our newest director level supporter. We'll look forward to playing a game with you and talking to you relatively soon.
Can I call you Zach?
You can follow us on our social media. That's Facebook, Twitter, and Twitch and YouTube. All of those links are in the show notes. Listen directly on any podcast provider of your choice. Subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes. And while you're at it, please leave a kind rating and review. This episode was edited and produced by...
That guy, by me,
by Tom Tate. Tom, how can they find you online? You said Discord. Is there any other thing that you want to pitch or promote at this time?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at Yo Power Time. Yo Power Time. I have a Rest in Peace podcast, Time podcast. But the archive is still up, so it's all about Nintendo Power Magazine. I made it through the first couple of years up to the Super Nintendo's release, just going through issues and talking about the history of the magazine and the history of different games that were featured. You can check that out, Power Time Podcast. But yeah, reach out to me on Twitter and in Discord.
Join us next week as we celebrate our 6-year anniversary as a podcast. Until then, I'm still Little Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
I'm Little Nolan.
I'm the Enchanted Beast.
The Enchanted Beast, not
yes,
a mouse.
He is.
And this has been New Game Plus.